Welcome to Split Screen Podcast, Episode 6, Return of the Shah. It's a special show today, but before we get into it, I want to take a moment and share something with everyone. The podcast is pretty new, and already I've been shown immense support by many people on social media and elsewhere, and I'm also pretty vain and egotistical, so it really feeds my ego to have so many people say so much nice shit about me. So with that in mind, if you do like the show and what I'm trying to do, feel free to leave me a star rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher. Tell me what you like, tell me what you want to see more of, tell me what you don't like that I should never do ever fucking again, and anything else really that your heart desires. I may even read out the review on air, which I am about to do with the first ever review that the Split Screen Podcast has gotten yet, coming straight from Stitcher. This is a very in-depth review by Mayank Nailwal, and I'm very sorry if I fuck up your name. I'm going to paraphrase, because there's a lot of, it's a long review, and there's a lot of embarrassing compliments here about me personally. And, you know, I try to keep shit modest from time to time, you know, it's how you get by in the world. But this is what Mayank has to say. It has barely been a few months when I came across the word podcast for the very first time. And now I am absolutely in love with it. Coming to this show presented by the charismatic voice of Shah Shaheed. I'm going to skip through all this. This is just some really blush-worthy gush. I'm happy to say that all of the 6 episodes are rich in content and full of delicious conversations. Then he compliments me some more, which you all know it's all true. If you're into movies, Shah has lots of fascinating stuff for you to talk about. Highly recommended by me, especially for all the cinephiles who have some interest in Indian films. It's worth your time. Mayank, thank you so much for that. I do appreciate it. Again, it's very insightful and it's very heartwarming to essentially get feedback like that from people. Your check is in the mail, by the way. But thank you for that completely unsolicited review from a person I don't know. Ladies, gentlemen, remaining members of the Galactic Empire, welcome to a very special episode of the Split Screen Podcast, the official podcast of BlankPageBeatdown.com. I am your host, Shah Shaheed, a.k.a. Shah Ganjin, and today my guest is none other than Wendy Fox Weber, a.k.a. Obi-Wen. And as promised, this is my version of a Star Wars special show, where we basically compare the original Star Wars trilogy to the much-scandalized prequel trilogy. And basically an excuse for me to talk Star Wars before the new movie comes out. So, a lot of things happening today. There's a lot of show to go by. So we're going to get right into it. First of all, welcome, Wendy, to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Shah. Very excited to be here.
I'm over the moon. I mean, anytime I get to talk Star Wars with anyone, it's a great conversation, especially with someone who is a lot more knowledgeable about the franchise than myself, which is you. So Wendy, tell us a little bit about your background, you know, how you got into Star Wars and what you do essentially that relates to that.
Okay. First of all, I was with Star Wars in the beginning. I saw the original movie when I was 13 years old. So I had that benefit of just coming into it right at the beginning when it started. It was very exciting. It was an incredibly unique experience seeing that movie. And it kind of started me on getting into movies, and also just my love of Star Wars obviously started at that point and has continued through my whole life. And what really has continued it for me is that I was able to introduce it to my kids, a new generation, that, you know, between 1983 and 1999, there wasn't much going on. So my Star Wars love kind of went a little dormant during that time. And in 1999, when the new movies were going to come out, I just realized I could introduce my kids to it. It was something I loved so much as a kid myself. And so that was a very exciting thing for me. And I'm pretty much a super fan. Everybody kind of knows me as the Star Wars person.
So you're a bona fide actual you're a super fan basically, like you said.
Yes.
Now you said also it kind of kickstarted your love for movies. So and how did that relate into what you're doing today in terms of you know, your career, your profession, that kind of thing?
Well, I'm a journalist. I've been a journalist my whole life, basically. And I'm an entertainment editor now, and I work for the Chicago Tribune Company. But I mean, I've written stories about Star Wars. Right now I'm in the process of working on a bunch of stories that we're going to have in the papers for the opening of the new movie. I've
Nice.
done some arts criticism, so it's not so much all professional. It doesn't relate to my profession. I don't have a Star Wars blog. Unfortunately, I don't get to, report on all the Star Wars.
If only, right, Wendy?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much going on, and it's so exciting. I mean, there's just new things every day. There's all these different movies and everything. But I mean, I have when it's professionally appropriate, I have used my knowledge of Star Wars
Nice.
as a journalist.
That's
So
amazing.
yeah, I've tried to keep it in, in my life in every aspect.
Why not? Why not? I mean, it's a great I love it. I mean, again, we could go on for hours. So for everyone that doesn't know, and I mean, I don't understand how anyone could not know Star Wars today. It's been, oh my God, like what, 40 something years?
Yeah, almost 40 years. It's about 38 years.
Right. So for everyone out there who don't know what Star Wars is, you know, what is this crazy thing? Why don't you give us a quick spoiler-free synopsis of, you know, the original Star Wars movie, A New Hope, Episode 4, and what it kind of spawned afterwards?
Okay, I think that Star Wars, at its heart, is a story of destiny. The protagonist in Star Wars, Luke Skywalker, starts out as a modest guy living a very modest life in a modest place, and through a series of pretty much coincidences, becomes involved in a revolution that is going on, a rebellion against the government, which is the Empire. But as the story goes on, he has a chance meeting with someone who ends up being a mentor to him, Obi-Wan Kenobi. And Obi-Wan Kenobi kind of reveals to him slowly that actually Luke is a pretty important person in the world and that he has a destiny. And at first he's a little bit reluctant about it, but as the story goes on, he becomes more engaged and more excited about the idea of getting involved in this rebellion. And it's partially because he meets a couple of very important friends to him, Han Solo, who kind of is almost like the opposite of Luke, is more of a someone who's just ruthless and just wants money and isn't interested in the greater good. And Luke, that makes Luke realize in a way that he is interested in the greater good and that service is something that is in his DNA, that he wants to help.
As we
And
find out
also he
later,
is,
literally.
yes, literally in his DNA. And Princess Leia is also somebody who is very involved in the rebellion, so they're kind of like opposites almost. And that also inspires him to get more involved in it. And as the story goes on, you realize that Luke is actually a pretty important guy in this story. He's not just a modest guy living a modest life. He has an important destiny.
And essentially, the whole thing is a never before seen at the time, massive space opera. I mean, this is, you know, as much of the story is heart, there's also visual effects. There's this massive space dogfights, and there's things that at the time, I mean, which you can attest to more than me, weren't really too commonplace. And even today, the concepts set up in the Star Wars universe, like a lightsaber, certain things technologically are impressive. They're pretty, you know, you go, that's pretty damn cool.
Absolutely.
So why do you think, I mean, obviously after that first movie that you just mentioned with Luke Skywalker, it's spawned into, there's been basically five other sequels slash prequels, six movies a total, with a seventh movie coming out. This is probably one of the world's largest film fictionalized cinematic, you know, legacies. And so why do you think, Wendy, that Star Wars is as big as it really is, without getting into too many spoilers for the movies themselves?
Oh, sure. Well, I think that part of I described it as a somewhat kind of a simple classic story, but I think it also gets into the idea of good versus evil, which is a very popular and very attractive concept. I think people struggle with the idea of good and evil in their everyday lives and also just like to watch stories about that. And also what you mentioned about the special effects, that is definitely very true. Star Wars came out at the same time as a couple of other key movies, Jaws had just come out a couple of years before, and these are movies that really started the blockbuster as a concept. And also in Star Wars you have the idea of being able to portray these ideas in space, you know, space battles and just spaceships. I mean, when you watch the original Star Wars, the very first shot is of mm-hmm. this big, small ship going across the sky, and then there's this ship that just gets larger and larger and larger and larger, and just tremendously influential in terms of just being so dazzling. And of course, obviously, George Lucas created all kinds of companies that, you know, Industrial Light and Magic, and the I'm blanking right now on the name of the THX, the
THX,
sound
yep.
companies, that just influenced movie making forever.
And still today, I mean, a lot of special effects for a lot of movies are done by Industrial Light and Magic, by ILM.
Oh, ILM is probably the most important part of George Lucas's legacy, maybe mm-hmm. more important than Star Wars, because it's gone out into other movies as well. It's gone out in just to a style of storytelling. But also, I think that, you know, even, you know, if you have nice effects, if it looks nice, that's important. But also the story has to speak to people. People have to, you know, be inspired by the story as well, I think. And that's a big part of the reason why Star Wars really works, is because the characters are characters that we've just fallen in love with. And, I mean, I have to laugh because I'm one of those people who kind of chuckles a bit at, there's a bounty hunter who comes in The Empire Strikes Back, Boba
yes,
Fett.
Yes, Boba.
Who has become just this major cultural figure. And in the movie, he kind of doesn't have very much content.
No, not at all.
There's something about his costume, the way he looks. And, you
and
know,
I think
just
it's a little bit of the voice, too, you know, right?
Pardon?
I think the voice, too, a little bit adds to the... I mean, and he has, I mean, in the original trilogy, he's got a few lines...
Right, he's very insignificant, and he's just some. Darth Maul was the same way, had a look that
in the
prequel trilogy, but had a look that people were just fascinated by. They had to find out more about this guy, and maybe he doesn't have the most content in the movies, but I think that's part of the whole Star Wars thing, is just developing these characters that even just the ones who don't necessarily have a lot of lines or aren't important to the story, they have a look and they have, you know, just a very interesting concept to them that people want to know more about.
Now, so before we go any further, it's really difficult. You mentioned a character from the prequels. It's really difficult to get into Star Wars because it has been almost 40 years. I mean, almost everything about the movies are available there. There's references to spoilers within other TV shows, so and pop culture in general. So we're going to try to kind of limit it, because my whole point is, if you haven't seen the Star Wars movies, I would love for you to check them out. I don't want to spoil it for you because, you know, despite the amount of time that they've been out, they're still very influential. They still have a very amazing dramatic effect. Like you mentioned earlier, Wendy, I also got my kids to watch them, and my kids are 7 and 3. And they... were obsessed, and at every plot point reveal, at every twist, they had the same reactions I had when I was a kid, and it was just a joy to kind of watch them go through those same steps, and it's almost like reliving it or watching it again for the first time through their eyes. So for everyone else that hasn't seen it, I don't want to take it away from you. However, we are going to get into full spoilers now, So, letting everybody know that from here on in, we will be discussing specific plot details, plot points, including even the climax of the entire Star Wars saga. This includes Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, Episode 4, A New Hope, Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back, and Episode 6, The Return of the Dread Jedi. So be warned, if you haven't seen any of these movies, please skip to the end of the show to get our Twitter handles and other contact information. Let's get right into it, Wendy. Now, before we start analyzing the original trilogy to the prequel trilogy, I do want to make a quick mention. My show has a lot of Bollywood movies that I feature mostly because I grew up on Bollywood. And it's a little amazing to me that some of the things in Star Wars would be very appealing to a Bollywood audience. Right off the bat, the original trilogy, you've got the separated, you know, twins at birth, which is a massive Bollywood trope right around the 80s. They had a lot of those, you know, twin separate or, you know, siblings separated at birth or twins separated at birth. And then you've got the melodrama with the father-son dynamic of the original Star Wars, which, again, massive Bollywood trope. And to a certain point, up until the reveal of who Luke's father is, it almost is also kind of a revenge story, you know, that he's attaching himself to this greater cause. But there's also a little bit of personal motivation behind it, because at the head of this cause, the opposing cause, is the guy who he thinks killed his father, which, again, massive Bollywood trope. And in the prequel trilogies, the love story itself, I don't think you can get more Bollywood than that. The crazy costumes, the amazing visuals of Amidala, and you know, especially Attack of the Clones, I think there's something there for Bollywood audiences. So if you're into Bollywood, you haven't seen the Star Wars saga, go check that out. I'm sure you'll find a lot more influences, a lot more connections that I can think of. So Wendy, we're going to get into it. It's going to be hard to talk about Star Wars and not talk about everything. And at the end of the day, at the heart of it, Split Screen Podcast is a comparison show. We compare two works of fiction against each other. In this case, we're going to compare two trilogies. Do you want to let people know a little bit of background before we start about what happened with these original trilogies versus the prequels? Like, why? Because a lot of people get the numeric sequencing kind of confused. They go, oh, I'll watch 1 to 6, you know. And I'm. How do you feel? What do you think the order of viewing is for these movies?
Actually, I am a person who feels it's okay to go in numerical order. I don't have a problem with numerical order.
Blasphemy!
Oh, blasphemy? Okay. Yes. I know a lot of people feel like you should go in the order that the movies were released. And, you know, I have to say, for being a pretty big Star Wars fan, there are so many debates in the Star Wars universe, and this is obviously one of them. And I don't really have a problem with doing it either way.
Okay.
I just feel like, you know, the story is, I mean, it's called Episode 4 for a reason, in my opinion.
Right. No, I understand the logic behind the numerical viewing of the chronological order. Personally, I just find, in terms of, like, I just think that if I was to watch Episode 3 first, before I saw Episode 4, when we have the epilogue scenes where things are kind of wrapping up and we see the birth of Luke and Leia, I don't think that would have had as much impact on me if I didn't know who Luke and Leia were.
I think that's an excellent point. And that's why it's really hard for me to say, because I kind of feel like there's things in the prequels that are very important to the story in general. And the prequels are essentially telling the story of who is Darth Vader. Yeah. How did he become Darth Vader? And I totally agree with what you say, but I also think it works in the opposite way, because you see the birth of the twins and then you see the twins grown up.
Their life, that's true. Oh, you know what? I never thought about that.
Yeah, and I also feel like there's a lot of emphasis on that kind of thing, and I'm kind of a person who feels like you do you in terms of how you should experience Star Wars.
Well, you're not completely wrong, because, I mean, I just rewatched them with my kids, and our first reaction after we finished Episode 3, and we started in release order, so I made them watch 4, 5, 6, and I went back to 1, 2, 3. And our first, like, just knee-jerk reaction after Episode 3 ended was to start Episode 4 again, just because it's Because my eldest daughter was, you know, she was just, she's like, oh my God, Luke, that's Tatooine. Luke's on Tatooine now. And, oh, there's Obi-Wan. And, oh, I guess he's going to go off into the cave. Oh my God. And then, like, we were just talking about it so much at the end that we're like, you know what, let's just watch again. Let's just watch four again. So I understand that. So that makes sense.
I also feel like there's another important thing, and that is tone. Episode three, I don't know about you, but episode three kind of wrecked me. It's a downer. I mean,
yes.
And it has to be, obviously, because it's, you know, a lot of things happen in episode three that are very important. You don't want to see them happen, yet you know they're going to happen. So there's this kind of feeling of dread watching episode three. And even though it's of the prequels, it's my favorite one, it's the one I watch the least because it just leaves me a little bit wrecked.
I completely agree with you. And I'm the same way. Although I do watch it over and over again because especially Obi-Wan's little outburst at the end of episode three, when they're on the Mustafar on the planet right after the horribleness that happens, that like you said wrecks me. Just his little outburst at Anakin right after he, you know, wins the fight, I just can't. That gets to me every time. I well up. I'm gonna get misty if we keep talking about it, Wendy. So in terms of, you brought up the tone for the prequel, so let's discuss the themes. So we're gonna compare the themes of the original trilogy with the themes present in the prequel trilogy. Earlier in the show, you did mention that essentially A New Hope, episode 4, and that original trilogy focuses a lot on destiny and other sort of, you know, thematic elements of storytelling, whereas the prequels do have a little bit of a shift because it is a different story that they're trying to tell. How did you feel about, in terms of the themes, what do you think the themes were in each trilogy, and how do you think they were better represented?
Well, I think that part of the thing with Star Wars is that it's been a very heavily analyzed piece of work. So I'm going to get that out of the way right away and say that I don't think anybody ever realized how heavily analyzed it would be. And I know George Lucas is among those people. Because it does seem like the original trilogy has, just on the surface, has a more gee whiz kind of tone to it. It's very throwbacky to, I mean, Lucas has acknowledged this, and I think I just made up a word, throwbacky. But
that's fine. We make up words here all the time.
Yeah. I think that, you know, George Lucas was trying to create a more modern version of stories from his youth. And we know that he used, like, World War II dogfights for certain fights in the movie.
Right.
We know that he based his story on the serials that he saw in his youth. And I think that the original trilogy has a reputation of being more of an optimistic, maybe more of an innocent type of story. Whereas the prequel trilogy, I feel, is widely regarded as being more political and much more about, you know, different governments clashing with each other and what the effects are of that. But when I look at the Star Wars movies, to me, it feels like there's just a kind of common tone throughout. And I feel that it is a very optimistic and kind of a gee whiz and kind of a throwback. And I mean, if you look at scenes in the in episode one, like the pod race scene, for instance, to me is just a modern retelling of, you know, a fantastic looking retelling of scenes we've seen in movies such as Ben-Hur, mm-hmm. or, you know, those types of pictures. And I think that the so I feel like it maintains that kind of innocent tone. And the acting style, I think you could almost, I doubt you will disagree, there is a Star Wars acting style that you just don't see.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about that in the next point, actually.
Yeah, and for better or for worse. But, I mean, there is, this movie has a universe. It knows what it's doing, and it knows where it's going. I mean, there are things that you could quibble with forever about, for instance, the brother and sister who kiss each other before they find out they're brother and sister, and things like that. But I feel like that there's a pretty consistent tone to them. And like I said before, the exception in my mind is episode 3, which I think just because of what episode 3 is in the story, where it falls in the story and what happens in episode 3, has a more serious tone. And it was the first one that was rated PG-13, and the new one is rated PG-13 as well.
And with episode 3, it was kind of, I mean, it is dark, but at the end of the day, when Lucas says, hey, remember that really, you know, remember one of the worst villains in the entire trilogy, I'm going to go back and tell you a story of how he became that villain. Right. We all expected that, didn't we? Like, I mean, we all kind of knew that this was coming. We get to see how he becomes Darth Vader. So even though 3 was kind of, you know, it was dark, sure, but I don't know why anyone was surprised that it was going to be. I expected it to be dark. I was hoping it would be a little, because at the end of the day, it's, I want to see how he became Darth Vader. And right. I know, and I don't know how, I mean, the rest of the prequel trilogy focuses more on his emotional state of mind and how his ideologies change into the, you know, the Darth Vader that we know. But the last, you know, the third act of episode 3 essentially shows how physically he makes a transformation, which is, you know, a little hard to watch for some people, or even for anyone really, if you're in love with the character. But in terms of the themes, you did mention that it was very political, the prequels, right?
Right.
So I think the biggest example of that is, again, I just rewatched them with my kids. They're not teenagers. They're not even preteens yet. And right. I remember when watching it, I mean, throughout the movie, I have to kind of give them a little bit of, you know, explanation as we go, just to kind of reiterate certain points. For the original trilogy, I didn't have to do that at all. They could follow the story. They knew what was happening. You know, aunt and uncle died. He's going to go with Obi-Wan. He's going to save the princess, blah, blah, blah. Pretty straightforward. When we got to episode 1, just the first act alone with the Trade Federation and their occupation of Naboo, I had a really difficult time explaining that to them.
Yeah.
Because how do I explain this concept?
Excuse me, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that it was like I just simplified it to countries are fighting.
Yes. and I think, you know, George Lucas wanted to tell the story in this way, but I absolutely agree, and there's been a lot of jokes made about the opening crawl of the Phantom Menace, and it's like there's a trade war, and it, you know, and yeah. People are like, what? This is Star Wars. What are you talking about? I think that part of that plays into, and we may be discussing this later in the show, but how the prequel trilogy is more about all the factors that lead to Darth Vader becoming Darth Vader, which include a lot of political unrest, include wars, but not wars in, like you said, the sense of the first movie, where it's just like, okay, those are obviously the bad guys, these are obviously the good guys. In the prequel trilogy, there's a lot of factors going on here. There's all these different races and planets, and you know, these guys are doing this, and these guys
and a lot of and a lot of elements to try to keep track of, or
oh, definitely
try to understand, especially by the third movie, when everything gets kind of flipped on its head, when you realize, when the reveal is, you know, obviously that the people we thought were the bad guys, the Trade Federation, they weren't. You know, they were essentially pawns in the greater scheme of the Chancellor. And then, especially afterwards, when you realize, oh, wait. So, because, I mean, essentially, like, for example, I thought that, you know, Lord Sidious was working with the Trade Federation, and that was going to be the eventual Galactic Empire. But then when you realize that, no, he's orchestrating things from a higher vantage point, and he's going to restructure the actual Republic into the Galactic Empire, so the, essentially turning the thing that was the good guys and making it evil.
Right.
And I think that was cool at the end of the prequel trilogy, where you realize that this is how the Empire happens. It's actually the Republic that becomes the Empire. I think that has a payoff for all the political stuff, but do you feel that it could have been trimmed down or simplified a little bit to still get to that end result?
Absolutely. And not just the political stuff, but also the romance angle. I'll give you an example of one way I thought that that it could have been trimmed down. In episode 2, there's a really awful scene, a picnic. We call it the frolicking picnic scene.
Oh, God.
My family, where Anakin and Amidala, Padme, have a very awkward romantic picnic. You're supposed to believe they're falling in love, but really it's just, it's so painful for everyone involved. There's some real bad CGI in it too.
Yeah.
And it's just a bad scene. I saw episode 2, the IMAX version, and IMAX movies have to be a certain length, so they had to cut, they had to trim things out of the movie. And that picnic scene was almost completely taken out. And it's a better movie without it.
Wow.
I mean, even though there's a scene that night where Padme is wearing a very beautiful outfit while she's telling Anakin to stay away from her, which is also kind of funny. But I think that the way that the story, Lucas felt the story wouldn't earn that moment unless they had the awkward picnic before, but the picnic is such a bad scene, though, so it would have been better to just take it out. I think that there are definitely some convoluted journeys that we take.
I mean, you bring up the love story angle. Even the love story angles, I mean, if they had created an interaction between these two characters that, you know, being together made them forget the world and all the problems and just brought them peace, even that would have been a better perspective than what we got, because in almost every interaction that they have, there's certain elements of the political atmosphere seeping in.
Sure, sure. Like, yes, even, they have very strange romantic pillow talk.
Right.
Who's going to take over the world and how they'll rule it?
Right, and then now there's a you know, space equivalent of a cow that I'm going to go ride for you, and it's just kind of what?
Yeah, and honestly, for every moment to me that really really lands in the prequel trilogy, there's a few that don't. For instance, to me, one of the best scenes in the entire prequel trilogy is when Obi-Wan goes to Kamino. It's this very mysterious planet. It's raining all the time.
Oh my God, yes.
And he meets these really creepy, very futuristic, very sophisticated creatures.
The giraffe
and
people?
And making clones.
Yeah.
And that scene always lands to me, because watching that scene, I'm just fascinated by every aspect of it. I'm fascinated by the people of Kamino.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fascinated by when there's this scene where he's walking down this hallway and he's seeing these production of these clones. It's just beautiful. It's really, really well done. It's creepy. You don't understand exactly where these clones are going to fit in the story, so it's a little upsetting. And so for every moment like that, there's, you know, are you an angel? You know, Anakin asking Padme, are you an angel? And very awkwardly flirting with her when he's 9 years old. I mean, the prequel trilogy is just full of contradictions. The end of the day, what I feel is that the good outweighs the bad. But I wanted to say one more thing about the comparison of the story and particularly Palpatine's role in the story. I watched Return of the Jedi probably 5 or 6 times before I really picked up on the fact that the Emperor was driving this whole story, and that he wanted Luke to kill Darth Vader so that Luke could be his new apprentice. That basically the whole thing is about the Emperor going apprentice shopping. And that Luke is the one he decides on. It took me several viewings of the movie to really pick up on that, just because there's so much in Star Wars that's fun to watch and great to experience, but that's a next level kind of thematic, you know, story. Whereas
the Emperor just wanted a new friend.
He just wanted a new guy to be his henchman,
yeah,
because he knew that Darth Vader was getting old. He was falling apart physically. And, you know, he just wanted a new guy to be his number two guy.
Well, it's similar to what he does in episode 3 in the beginning, where, I mean, essentially Count Dooku is his apprentice,
exactly,
post Maul, and he starts grooming Anakin to kill Dooku, yeah, and essentially eventually become Darth Vader.
Right, right. But I mean, these are very similar themes, though. And, you know, basically, like you said, the exact same story is happening again. But I feel like that people ascribe this more whimsical tone to the original trilogy, whereas that's a pretty darn dark thing to be doing.
It is. I mean, and again, and I mean, in terms of, if you want to talk about, you know, the mentor-apprentice relationship and themes, there's a reference in, again, episode 3, where, you know, Palpatine has this amazing, you know, monologue where he tells the story of Darth Plagueis.
Oh, to, it's one of my favorite scenes, yes.
And the amazing part, again, I just thought about that now that you bring it up, is ironically, he implies, or basically just comes out and says it, that essentially Darth Plagueis was killed in his sleep by his own apprentice. And unfortunately, that's kind of how he went out, because he got right. killed at the end of it all by his apprentice. The original trilogy is essentially Luke's story.
Right.
Whereas the prequels are his father, Anakin Skywalker's story. So if we were to compare directly these two characters, their performances by the two actors, Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker, the amazing Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker, not counting the kid from episode 1 because he was whatever.
Yeah. So we can leave him out.
We could, yeah, I mean there's no reason to get him wrapped up in all this. But right. So who do you, I mean, again, just obviously they're different stories, they're different portrayals, but who did you like better, or who were you more, I guess, rooting for, if that even makes sense?
Well, you know, I mean, I when I was 13, I saw Star Wars, and I had the biggest crush on Mark Hamill.
Of course.
Of course, it continues to this day. Well, most of the girls liked Han, but I liked Luke, so whatever.
Right.
But, you know, I really...
You like the good boys.
Yes, right. Exactly. I really bonded to Luke, obviously. But the thing that was interesting to me is that I also really bonded to Anakin, because, like I said, that third movie really hits me hard. Now, I feel that they're kind of similar in their style of acting, that these are not Shakespearean trained actors, okay? But I, you know, I have to come out and say that it's, you know, Mark Hamill to me.
Yeah.
Luke is the better one. I do feel like Hayden Christensen took a lot of abuse for his performance.
Yes.
It may not have all been his fault. He had some dialogue issues and things like that.
Oh, my God.
But at the same time, you know, it's Luke. If I have to pick somebody, I'm picking Luke.
So, I mean, Anakin, Mark Hamill plays Anakin very... naively, very innocently, very, you know, he's our Harry Potter into the world of the Star Wars universe, basically. He doesn't know what's going on. He's very, you know, he gets introduced to every element step by step by step, maybe up until the Return of the Jedi, where he's pretty much an expert. Hayden Christensen, on the other hand, started his role, like his first appearance was almost like, you know, at the stage of Luke Skywalker at Return of the Jedi. He was 10 years older than when we first saw him as a kid. And he doesn't have time to react. He has to establish, which right off the bat, I think, is a raw deal. And then you tell the kid to, you know, now you have to gradually show progression from idealistic to bitter, cynical, fearful, and 50 other emotions convincingly. And while I don't think Christensen is a strong enough actor to have pulled that off in episode 2, episode 3, I think his raw talent as an actor acts like kind of lends to the performance itself, because he's supposed to be playing someone who's confused, he's not sure of what he's doing. And I think him as an actor, those elements work into the role a lot better.
I see your point. I feel like my heart is with Mark Hamill just because it is, you know, because it's like he's been around longer.
Hamill's
but
amazing.
I actually am not a Hayden Christensen hater at all.
No, neither am I. I get people's complaints. Again, episode 2 was terrible, and he was horrible in it, but the exact same thing I think in episode 3 works so much better, because now you know this kid is at conflict, you know, internally. Anakin Skywalker doesn't know what the hell he's doing, and
right.
It's clearly evident with his eyebrow acting, his confused, like in episode 2 his confused looks were like, dude, you're supposed to like this girl, like stop being perplexed by it. Whereas in episode 3 you see it and you're like, oh, he's so torn apart.
Right.
Well,
right.
How did you feel each character's significance in the overall universe was, in terms of Luke's significance to what was happening in the story of the original trilogy versus, you know, Anakin's significance to the story of the world that was happening around him?
Well, I think that their stories are very similar in a lot of ways, because like I said at first, my first comment was about destiny. They both have a destiny. Unfortunately, they have the opposite destiny of each other. And I think that's what makes it very interesting, is that, you know, the main character in each story is, you know, going down a completely different road, you know. Anakin is turning to evil and the dark side, and Luke is becoming more of, you know, the good service person that he will become in the story. I think that it's hard for me to say, because I think that their significance to the story is pretty similar, in my opinion, both of them, because you know, so much depends on those characters.
No, and I completely agree with you. I almost feel as if both their paths were kind of very similar, with one key difference being pressure. You know how when we're about to do anything, people say, you know, don't feel pressure to do, you know, and you'll perform better. If I apply that to the Star Wars saga, Luke ended up becoming, you know, a new hope and the savior of, you know, the galaxy without any pressure. No one expected him to do so. No one knew anything about him. He wasn't, you know, anyone until, again, like you said, through chance encounters, he ends up, you know, aligning himself to his destiny and ends up saving the universe. Whereas right off the bat, Anakin, as soon as he got on the radar of the Jedi's, has all this pressure to be the chosen one.
And such a good point.
And you hear about, you know, I mean, you hear about students in school that the pressure got to them and they cracked. And I feel, again, both Anakin and Luke are, you know, ended up or were supposed to be, you know, the savior of the universe. But one did so without any expectations, where the other one broke down because of all the pressure that you're the chosen one. You have to bring balance to the Force and blah, 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 blah. And I think that is the key distinction between two of them. You know, that Anakin just was horrible at handling pressure.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Also, I think that the whole idea of being a Jedi in the first place is, you know, which was well established when in the prequel trilogy, there were Jedi everywhere. There were people being trained to be Jedi from when they were very, very young. Whereas Anakin is ripped from his mother, who is a slave, and who remains a slave after he after Anakin goes off to become a Jedi, which is one of the most profound things that happens to him, and is a large part of what sets him on the bad path, is that Anakin just doesn't understand this Jedi way. And by the time Luke comes along, that whole thing has been destroyed. So he wasn't ripped from his parents when he was a kid. Although I get the sense, especially in episode 2, when they show there's a scene where Yoda is training the younglings, and I feel like it's a much more like a prep school environment. It's not necessarily, you know, like
Jedi Academy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And it's not necessarily the way it was with Anakin, which, you know, Qui-Gon makes a major mistake taking Anakin away from his mother without even trying to get involved in helping his mother because of what it does to Anakin.
Well, what I never understood about the Jedi way and about, I mean, when they're administering the test to young Anakin in episode 1, Yoda picks up on this, and Yoda sees that, you know, fearful of your mother you are. And you know, and
that's a spot on Yoda, by the way.
And thank you. And my thing is, you know, he's a kid, and clearly this is a special situation because Yoda says he's too old, he can't be trained. So you guys are admitting that this is a special case, and clearly he's a 9-year-old boy afraid of his mother. Shocking, you know, this is an unseen, unforeseen situation. Why didn't you work a little bit harder to maybe bring his mother into the fold, so maybe she could support your training?
I think that it's important to the story, but it doesn't make a lot of sense. But also at the same time, I think it's a big part of what makes Anakin turn in the end.
Oh, of course. I mean,
so it's kind of got to be there, but it is one of those moments where you just wonder, you know, why. They're, like you said too, Yoda, you know, senses it in him right away. Why these guys were like blindsided by this is kind of mysterious.
Yeah, like, we're going to socially isolate him. He's not used to the lifestyle. We're aware of that. He's too old. We're aware of that. He misses his mother. We're aware of that. But instead of trying to make any other exceptions beyond accepting him as a Jedi, we're going to keep hammering him with situations that he's not fully familiar with. But speaking of Anakin turning to the dark side, I've had this question for a while. And this isn't one of those things that I've seen, you know, or read about too much. And I figured this is a good platform to kind of discuss it. So in episode one, so obviously the world from episode 4, 5, 6 to the prequels is completely different. In the original trilogy, the Jedi and Sith are essentially, you know, extinct, or their ways are done and they're basically gone. The world has moved on from the concepts of Jedis and Siths. Whereas in the prequel trilogy, the Jedi are not only very present, they're essentially the universal police. They're the ones maintaining order. And right. They feel that the Sith are, you know, extinct, or their ways are gone, or, you know, whatever. So So when Anakin is supposed to bring, quote-unquote, balance to the Force, I've always had a question of, well, balance means, you know, an equality between two opposing aspects. So if, and again, I don't know, I've never, again, you'll know a lot better than I will, but so to me, when someone is supposed to bring balance to a situation of overwhelming Jedi versus many few Sith, that is exactly what I think he's going to end up doing, which is what ended up happening, that clearly he has to balance the scales.
Right.
So wasn't that almost a kind of foreshadowing? Because how else do you bring balance to something that's tipped to one side, which is the good side? You have to balance up the scales and either add more of the evil side or cull the good side a little bit.
Well, I think that that's one of those big themes of Star Wars that is, you know, you just have to kind of, you know, shrug emoji. they sense that there's bad in their midst. It's referred to countless times. The Sith are going to return.
Right.
And no one seems to have any idea who the Sith are, what they're up to, that kind of thing. And, you know, it seems like they should have known at some point that the guy who's right in front of them, who's their benevolent leader, is the bad guy. Like, they should have been able to sense that. That's something that I've always wondered about. And also, like you said, bringing balance was the fall of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And
that goes
Jedi,
without saying.
Yeah, and I think that the Jedi, and this, again, is something that you don't necessarily need to get into with your 7-year-old yet. Ultimately, I think the Jedi are arrogant, and they are dismissive. We just had a discussion about how they separate Anakin from his mother. And I never really bonded with Qui-Gon because of that, you know. I always thought Qui-Gon was kind of, you know, he was a rogue. It was stated many times that he had not necessarily gone along with the council.
Yeah.
But, you know, I felt like he was kind of an arrogant guy and he wasn't really listening to anyone. And that is kind of describes the Jedi in general, as it turns out.
If you think about it.
It almost like the Jedi had to fall because they just weren't doing it right anymore. Maybe they became set in their ways.
If you actually think about it, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Qui-Gon. if there's anyone that anyone should be mad at, it's Qui-Gon Jinn.
I've always felt that way about Qui-Gon. People pick on Jar Jar so much, which we don't have to mention Jar Jar again.
No,
but
that's not.
Qui-Gon is the one who I really think, boy, he really messed up here.
You fucked up, Qui-Gon. I love Qui-Gon. He's actually one of my favorite characters from the original trilogy. Good or bad, he was the guy that brought Anakin into our lives, so I can't really hold him against that. Especially that last scene. Of episode one with Obi-Wan, and that fight scene is by far one of my favorite fight scenes of the entire saga, actually.
That's a wonderful scene. It's a wonderful scene. And, you know, I've heard people say, oh, it's too choreographed, and it's just like, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Gorgeous. It's amazing. And especially when you see I mean, the best part of episode one to me, and the connection that even my kids got, was just watching a young Obi-Wan becoming Obi-Wan. And that to me is one of the best things about the prequels trilogy. Where, because the original Obi-Wan, we didn't get to see him a lot in episodes, you know, in the original trilogy. So I love that they went back and they brought this character back. Ewan McGregor is the perfect choice.
Such a great actor.
And he was just, and the way he transforms into, when episode two I see him with the beard, I'm like, oh my God, like, there's Guinness, you know what I mean? Like, and it was just, it was just perfect. But, so, I mean, we've discussed, you know, the whys and the hows of the prequel trilogy. So I'm going to ask you a question, and this is kind of, I guess, may spark a bigger debate. But would you say that the prequels were necessary in the overall Star Wars saga as we know it?
Well, I absolutely think they were necessary, because I feel that, especially episode three, which I've talked about episode three a lot, seeing Darth Vader as in his human form, I guess you'd say, you know, by the time the original trilogy comes along, he is, you know, he's a monster basically.
Yeah. He's Frankenstein's monster. If you think about it.
Yeah. You never really get the sense until like the last 10 minutes of Return of the Jedi that he has any human feelings going on in him at all. Well, maybe it's like the last half hour.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's just a thug. He's a monster. He's a bad guy. And throughout the prequel trilogy, he's not always the most likable human on the planet that he's on. But I also think that you see him as a person who had a pretty hard life, and who has regret already in his, you know, in his face, when he's fighting Obi-Wan, when he, you know, when he goes through that horrible transformation of becoming Darth Vader, which I think is a great scene and is another word I've used a lot, throwback type scene to, you know, old monster movies and stuff.
And it looks exactly like that too. That set piece that they did at the end of episode three, where him and the Emperor are standing side by side and it's just smoky, foggy, that's very reminiscent of monster movies where, you know, the monster rises.
I mean,
the only thing missing was the lightning in the background, right?
Right, right. The way he walks in that scene, I really love it.
Yeah.
And it's a horrible scene to watch because it's very sad, it's very tragic. But it's also, it's very important, I feel, to, and the first words out of his mouth is, "How's Padme?"
Yeah.
So you get that sense that, you know, this guy, he's a complicated guy.
No.
And I actually love the no. I think the no.
Really? Really? I think.
I love the no.
I thought it was a little artificial. I thought... And that was James Earl Jones, right?
That was James Earl Jones.
I felt like he phoned that in. I feel like they did a bunch of takes.
And that's like, I'm not at lunch. I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I've been doing this for 40 years. You have enough. Recut the one from episode three, episode six. So.
And I understand that, you know, I really look at the no not just as like the acting of the no, which it is a little restrained. It seems like he's yelling a little louder.
Yeah, I felt like I can almost see Lucas in the room with Jones, and Jones starts off with a no, and I can see Lucas doing his hands like, keep it going, keep it going. And he's like, no.
No.
speaking of wooden deliveries, so... Great segue, right?
We could go on for days about this part.
So, well, I just want to quickly touch. I mean, in terms of this is relevant to the tone. I don't want to go into a whole massive about the acting.
Nice.
But I feel so. There's obviously a lot of controversy before, you know, about the dialogues in the movie. You know, the prequel trilogy, cheesy as hell, and that's one of the biggest complaints about the prequel trilogy, that the dialogues were horrible. And again, I don't disagree with that, but I feel like the tone and setting of the rest of the movie have a lot to do with it. Because if you objectively go back to the original trilogy, there are a lot of lines you can pick out as being just as cheesy.
Definitely.
But when it comes to the delivery by the actors, we're in a setting of, you know, 70s, almost like grassroots science fiction, which is very, you know, practical, not a lot of CGI. The cinematography is very, you know, subtle. It's not as, you know, blatant. Even the scenes on the Superstar Destroyers, they're not, you know, as extravagant as some of the scenes we got in the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy. So I feel like in that setting, in that context, in those tones, when you have, you know, I love you, I know. I feel like those lines work in that movie, whereas the exact same cheesy stuff in the prequels don't. Do you see that as, like, do you feel that way as well, or am I just completely just biased about the originals?
You are. I feel exactly the same way you do. I feel that the dialogue throughout the films is pretty similar. I think that a big problem is that, yeah, there's this kind of antiseptic air to the prequels that for some reason makes it just, you know, the same dialogue feel a little bit more false, feel a little bit less real. And even when you watch the special editions, I mean, I watched the original movies when they came out, and in the special editions, there's all this, you know, especially I think it's most prominent in episode 4. There's all these added like creatures and stuff in certain scenes, and it feels a little crowded. Yeah. And it doesn't, you know, change the movie as fundamentally as I think that the preponderance of CGI did in the prequel trilogy. But your basic point that this is dialogue that is, you know, I mean, Harrison Ford pretty famously said you could write this shit, but you can't say it. And he was talking about episode 4, the one we all love, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that the dialogue is very similar throughout the series. There's something about the antiseptic tone of the prequels, well, I think, and, that well, and, makes it and seem and a little worse.
It also has it a lot, has to, a lot do to do with... well, there's a bit of an echo here now. Okay, we'll try to suffer through this. So with the prequel trilogies, I find amidst the other conversation, I mean, again, the original trilogies were very simple. We got save the princess, help me, Obi-Wan, da-da-da-da-da. The prequel trilogy starts off with, like, political. You know, you have, you know, like, these political concepts being discussed in Trade Federation, treaties, ambassadors, and the rest of the dialogue is pretty... I don't want to say intellectual, but pretty complex for a movie of that kind. So when you shift from that to hold me like you did in Tatooine, it's just like, what the hell is that? I think that's the biggest disconnect, where, you know, you went from simplified, you know, emotions and lines and plot points to something complicated, but you didn't elevate the rest of the dialogue and the interactions to that same level of, you know, the Senate meetings and stuff like that. You still have complicated political Senate shit, and then you've got, you know, like 1970s dialogue for the romantic scenes.
Right, definitely. And that's something that's been said about Lucas all along, that he just struggles with these types of things.
And he's not an actor's director.
Either. No, he's not.
Again, I think Natalie Portman really gets the short end of the stick when it comes to prequels, because I notice her scenes where it's just her. I mean, episode 1, she was brilliant.
Yes.
But as soon as she starts being relegated to Anakin's second plot point, you know, to lead him down the dark side, she becomes nothing. Her lines are horrible. She has, I mean, and it's more obvious in episode 3, because the entire movie she's with him and she has these terrible, terrible lines. There's one line she has when she's in the Senate, right when the Palpatine announces that he's reshuffling everything into a galactic empire. And she has this amazing line, and she delivers it with such, you know, just impact. You know, she says, you know, so this is how democracy ends, with thunderous applause.
Right.
And I look at that scene, and it's just one line, but then I look at her scene, every other scene she had with Anakin, and I'm like, is it just him? Like, I don't, like, she's amazing here without him, and she was amazing in all of episode 1 with all the, you know, I am the queen and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And just when she becomes his girl, she's horrible.
Yeah, they don't have very good chemistry, I guess, is the understatement of the century. But yeah, they struggled, both of them, I think, did. But yeah, but she is such a fine actress, and, you know, she's an Oscar-winning actress, and it's really mystifying with her. I have to say, though, just to throw in, My autobiography is going to be titled "Anakin Skywalker Had a Point About the Sand." Sand is the worst. I'll just leave it at that.
What the hell?
It does get everywhere.
Wendy, that is profound. So now, everything that we've discussed about both the trilogies, obviously there is, I don't know if you've heard, but there's a new one coming out. You didn't know?
Oh, what a coincidence. This is great. We're talking about this now.
The timing of it all, right?
I know.
So episode 7, Star Wars The Force Awakens, essentially, from what I understand, starts off, I believe, 30 years after the events of Return of the Jedi. Everyone's old. My kid was looking at the trailer, and she's like, "That's not Leia." I'm like, "Yeah, baby, but she's old now." And she's like, "Oh." So everyone,
someday, tell her.
Sorry?
Tell her you're going to look like that someday.
Yeah. It's going to happen to everybody. So everyone's 30 years older. There's a new cast of characters. You've got, John Boyd. You've got Daisy Ridley?
Yeah.
Something like that. And you've got, obviously, Oscar Isaac. So those are the new three guys. You've also got all the original cast returning, including Peter Mayhew as Chewbacca, and I think the dude inside of C-3PO, not inside like that. But so basically, this is a new chapter. This is Star Wars for a new generation, 30 years into it. How much of what we discussed today for both the trilogies would you like to continue on to this new movie and future films of the franchise? Because they've announced there's going to be one or two Star Wars movies now every year going forward.
Right.
How much of what we discussed today, the good and the bad, do you want to see continue on or be left out of these new movies and these new franchises, starting with The Force Awakens?
You know, it's interesting to me because I've seen the trailers and I've watched them over and over again, maybe. But I feel like it's going to be almost completely new. And that's really exciting to me. I mean, one of the things I think is the most reminiscent of the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy is the presence of BB-8 and just the excitement about BB-8. That's the robot, the new round robot.
The soccer ball robot, yeah.
Yeah, and just the excitement level around that character, for lack of a better way to put it, is very similar to the excitement level around R2-D2 when the original movies came out. You know, there's just a lot. People are fascinated by this cute little soccer ball bouncing up and down. And, it's exciting to have the original people back and see what happened to them in the 30 years since the original trilogy ended.
Mm-hmm.
But I almost think of it as almost a completely new thing on its own.
Oh, of course.
And what I'll compare it to is, when I saw the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie, the first one that he did.
2009, yeah.
I was so excited. And my comment to my kids after I saw that movie was, boy, it would be great if that guy got his hands on Star Wars.
Wow.
And somewhere along the way, my dream came true because I'm a big J.J. Abrams fan.
So am I. And almost, I think, a lot of people even said, I remember hearing that with the 2009, the reboot of Star Wars, Star Trek, everyone did mention that he kind of did make a Star Wars movie with that.
Right.
Because you've got the prodigal son, you've got, the chip on his shoulder, the giant machine he has to destroy, and all these elements apparently. And again, there's a lot more. I mean, if you guys want, look it up. I'll try to find an article to put in the show notes. But a lot of people did say that J.J. Abrams basically auditioned to get the Star Wars movie by making Star Trek.
Yeah, and I definitely felt that too. And one of the real things that I felt about it, now, I'll admit I'm not a Star Trek fan, even though I think it's ridiculous that there's a Trek versus Wars thing.
That's too much.
But I was a fan of the J.J. Abrams movies, and I think that the biggest reason for me was, here's this established property, and he took it in a completely different direction, and it was exciting and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a really fun movie. And I found myself being excited about watching a Star Trek movie, which is not something I had experienced. And I feel like that's what he can bring to this franchise is that here this is this they're very similar. The franchises are very similar in terms of fan expectations, in terms of legacy, in terms of what they've become in the culture. Yes, Star Wars is more prominent, but Star Trek also has a committed fan base, and a lot of that fan base didn't necessarily like the J.J. Abrams movie, but it just introduced it to kind of everybody, and that's why I feel like what's going to happen with these new Star Wars movies is that it's, you know, Star Wars is hardly a niche property. It's as mainstream as you get. But the idea of, you know, what would be the point of continuing this if it isn't going to go off in a new direction, isn't going to give us just a brand new perspective on these characters and this universe. I just think the perfect choice.
Would you want the more political and complex background, real world themes of the prequel trilogies to continue forward with this, or would you want them to kind of stay more true to a space adventure, more, you know, character driven like the original trilogy?
Oh, I admit in that area I am hoping for more character driven, less political stuff.
Who do you think Rey is, the girl from the new?
Well, movie? You know, it's I've tried really hard not.
Whose daughter do you think she is what I'm asking, Wendy?
Yeah, I think she is related. I think she is related somehow. To me, she looks like Carrie Fisher. So I think that is important. Yes.
Okay.
I feel, and I'm not the only person who said this. I've tried really hard not to say it, though.
Sorry.
I don't want to speculate. But Luke is not evil.
Luke is not evil? Okay. Because you know what? No. I feel like I agree with you because I think that's too easy. That's way too easy.
We can't assume anything because JJ is notorious for keeping things under wraps.
Thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. Where can people get a hold of you to talk more Star Wars if they want?
Okay, well, I'm on Twitter, and my handle is TV Jedi because I used to do a TV column, and I'm a Jedi.
Of course.
My day job is for the Chicago Tribune newspapers, which you can find at chicagotribune.com, where I'm an entertainment editor in the suburbs of Chicago. And that's about it for me.
Thank you for listening to this very special episode of the Split Screen Podcast, the official podcast of blankpagebeatdown.com. You can subscribe to the podcast directly on iTunes or Stitcher or your preferred podcasting app. Go to the website blankpagebeatdown.com to hear about some of the links we discussed on today's show. Subscribe to the site itself with your email in the top corner for all my random rants and reviews of Bollywood, Hollywood, and now with the mid-season finales coming for television, a lot of television shows as well. Follow the podcast on Twitter at splitscreen_pod. Follow me personally on Twitter at @TheShahShahid. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/blankpagebeatdown. And email me any comments, suggestions, hate mail, or just say hi at shah@blankpagebeatdown.com. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas to everyone. And may the Force be with you all.